When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, my name's Jess Phillips and this is Yours Sincerely. I've always been a prolific letter writer, both the good and bad kind, and know the power of putting words to paper. So in this podcast, I want to give my guests a chance to celebrate three people that mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. And when we've heard more about each person, they'll reveal how they would sign off each letter. Zara McDermott is a documentary presenter and reality TV host who became known for her appearances on Love Island and Celebrity X Factor. Last year, she presented two powerful documentaries for BBC Three, uncovering rape culture and revenge porn based on her own experiences of cyberbullying and sexual assault. This spring, she's presenting the new BBC Three reality dating show, Love in the Flesh. So, hello Zara, how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, apart from, you know, all the crisis in the world. You can't let that drag you down all the time. But we're going to now, we're going to celebrate the good things in the world. And it's one of the reasons that I started making this podcast is because I was surrounded by people who were losing their loved ones. My constituency had, in the first wave of the pandemic, the second highest death toll. And I was speaking to people who just had never got to say the things they wanted to say about the people that they loved. And there's so much to be frightened of in the world that sometimes we forget to sit and celebrate. The reasons why we are frightened is because of the things that we love and losing them, and the things that we love need to be focused on. So that's why we sort of started it. But so generally, are you much of a letter writer?
I would say I do like writing a lot of words in a card. I do write a lot of letters to my boyfriend. I leave him like a letter on the bed sometimes. Or sometimes if we've like had a bit of an argument about something, and I'm very much like, I'm not very confrontational. I like to just get it squashed, and I like to, if I'm feeling a certain way, I like writing it down in a letter because I think it's a bit like romanticized and makes it feel a little bit more authentic than just saying it, like when you've taken the time to write it. So yeah, I've written a lot of letters to my boyfriend. So yeah, I guess I am a bit of a letter writer. I'm a bit more of like a flower giver. I like giving people flowers as well with a nice card.
I like giving people flowers because I love receiving flowers. I mean, that feeling when someone sent you and you didn't know it was coming. Oh, God, it's like magic. It's like actual magic.
It is.
I absolutely love it. There's no greater feeling than that. Like, and you don't know who it's from. And you're like, oh, gosh, it's so exciting.
For Valentine's Day, my boyfriend got me this huge bouquet of roses, like literally the size of me, and they're all dead, but I can't throw them away.
Life hack for you, turn them upside down.
Yeah.
So tie them together, turn them upside down and hang them somewhere. And when you turn them upside down, they dry out and then you can keep them forever.
Oh, lovely. Okay, I'll do that.
Jess life hacks. So I've got a rose from the day I was elected. Obviously, I'm a Labour Party politician and this emblem is a rose. And I have a rose that I wore on the day that I was elected and I dried.
Oh, amazing. I love that.
And I have the roses from my wedding day. They're dried. Just hang them upside down and they'll dry out beautifully. There you go.
Oh, lovely.
So do you have any letters that you've kept from the past, like letters that you've cherished or cards that you've cherished?
I do have one right here, actually. Well, I'll tell you what this was. The reason why this meant a lot to me was because it was from a teacher. So after I released my first documentary, I got this about a year ago. It's from my old psychology teacher, and I absolutely loved her. And she just wrote me this lovely, lovely card, and it just basically says that, you know, she's really sorry that she didn't know anything about what happened to me, and that she thought I was really brave in sharing my story. And she just said, she reassured me that if the same thing was to happen today, she knows that it wouldn't, because what happened to me in school wasn't very nice. I got suspended after my revenge porn incident. And yeah, essentially she said that I want to assure you that this wouldn't be dealt with in the same way. And it was everything like I wanted to hear from someone who was at my school. And it was really nice. It honestly meant the absolute world to me, and I've kept it ever since. And she probably doesn't even know that I've kept it, because she actually gave it. She came to my, I think she might have came to my house, and my dad was there. And she gave it to my dad.
So when you were a teenager, you had suffered from an incident of revenge porn. When you were 14, was it?
I was 14, yeah.
You were 14, and your previous... Tell us the story.
So a boy in my year basically pressured me to send a photo. I hadn't even kissed a boy at this point. He pressured me to send a photo. He was actually a family friend, so my parents knew him well. And I sent one after he, like, worked on me for a few weeks. And then the next day it was everywhere in school. It was emailed to my teachers. It was printed off, put in the classroom or my form teacher's desk. It was sent around on email. It was broadcast on BBM. It was throughout all other schools in my county. It was everywhere. And in order to deal with this incident, I was actually quite badly sanctioned, I guess, at school. I was very badly punished by the school. I was suspended for a couple of days for my actions. The boy wasn't, because they thought he was innocent and it was my fault for sharing it. And yeah, after that point, so I was 14 years old, my parents were called in as well to the office and had to see the picture. It honestly was soul destroying.
I mean, and I've dealt with some pretty awful abuses in my life. I've met women with, you know, the most harrowing stories to tell. And what you're describing would still be considered to be like low level, like, oh, you know, it's one of those things. But actually, when you think, like, you know, if I close my eyes and imagine me at 14 and that happening to me, it is genuinely harrowing. That would be absolutely, it would be harrowing if it happened to me now. And I'm a big grown-up woman with all sorts of resource in the world, and it would be absolutely harrowing. But for that to happen to you, and for you then to be punished.
Yeah, you know, my parents had no idea how to deal with it. So my parents...
We wouldn't know the words revenge porn 11 years ago.
No,
like, that wasn't a word that anybody used or knew.
Exactly. So my parents are basically said to the school, you know what, you've probably seen this before, like, what do we do? And they were like, well, you have to punish her the way that we're punishing her. So, you know, it was, honestly, it still affects me, and it's made me the person I am. So in some ways I'm like grateful that I went through that and it's made me the person I am today. But it's also affected me so much. Like, I notice things in myself every day and I'm like, oh, that goes back to that time. Like, I really didn't make any true friends, and I struggled to make friends for years after that. You know, I was still being bullied about it at 18. I remember I used to go into sixth form, and but in sixth form, you're like 17, 18 years old. And I used to just go and sit in, we had a learning zone where it was like dead silent. You could go and do your work. And I would just go and sit in there every break I could, because I couldn't bear and face being around people, because I felt so guilty for being friends with people, because I saw the bullying that other people were on the receiving end of by trying to be my friend. that I felt so bad even just being friends with someone because I felt like it was awful.
Classic violence against women and girls is to isolate a victim, is to pick on people who have anything to do with them in order that they then get completely isolated from everybody. It's like there's a bloody manual online of how to abuse a woman. It's always the same bloody story. It drives me mad that, like, there must be, like, I don't know, like seminars and how to do it, because everybody does the same bloody thing.
I know, but it was a really horrible experience, and, like, I look back and I'm like, oh, I was just a little girl. Like, I was just 14, I was just a little girl, and I wish my innocence wasn't, I guess, taken from me that young. And so, yeah, that was my experience. And, you know, when I say it, it doesn't sound like, maybe it does sound bad, but
it,
like,
it sounds awful, like, Zara. I mean, maybe I'm just saying that because, you know, I'm an angry feminist, but it sounds awful. Anyone who could actually have the empathy for a 14-year-old kid, I'm the mother of a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old, and the idea that somebody would do that to them, it makes my heart want to stop. It sounds awful. And yeah, then for you to be taught by your school, to be taught that if these things happen to you, you're at fault. That's what sets in for women from a very early age, and then that will stick with them for the rest of their bloody lives.
The worst thing for me was when, so I had a policeman come into the school and talk to me, and he said that I could be arrested for creating child pornography. He told me that, and I was convinced I was going to prison. I was like, I'm going to prison. I remember thinking, I know I'm going to get a knock at the door and I'm going to prison. And I believed that so much.
Of course you did, because you're a child and that is an authoritative adult.
Yeah, I know. And it was just terrifying. So, yeah, that's the situation that I went through. So when I got this letter, it made me just, like, it took so much off of my shoulders and made me feel like someone of authority in that school for the first time had, like, heard me and had heard what I'd gone through and had empathy. And that's something that I wanted and I'd been wanting for the last 10 years, you know. But it meant so much, literally so much. So,
well, I think that we've come a long way. It'd be still dreadful. Yeah. It's still bad, the system. But I like to think that a teacher nowadays would not respond that way. And that's because of people like you telling your story. So, you know, it's dreadful that you had to go through that, but it's, you know, at least being able to use your voice about it means that the next teacher might not behave, you know, or a police officer might not threaten a victim with prison. I mean, it's pretty bad. That is, it's like 101 bad response. I mean, I hear bad responses from authority every single day. To suggest to a child that they were basically a paedophile themselves, having been a victim, is, that's pretty low. So fair play to you for still standing up and carrying on. I just don't know that I'd ever have been able to go back to school again. It must have taken so much guts.
It did. And my mum says, my mum's biggest regret is not moving me to a different school. It's her biggest regret in life, is like, she was like, I don't know why I kept you there, should have moved you, but I just believed that things would get better. And I think also I wasn't probably honest with her about what was going on. Also, my mum was also a food tech teacher at the school.
Oh, so man.
It put her in a really, really difficult position as a member of staff, because she, like, what could she... She was... If she was too, like, vocal, she would have lost her job. And she was constantly toying with like, losing her job or... You know, so my dad had to deal with a lot, and, like, having your dad deal with that is freaking hard.
Yeah, that is a lot. That is a lot. So, we're going to cheer it up now. I mean, I feel like it's been... I'm trying to be cheerful, but we're talking about Ukraine and police officers failing people. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. I'm the person here to tell you it's not your fault. So, I've asked you to think of three people that you would want to send a letter to. So the first one is the person who means the world to you. So who would that be?
Oh my God, 100% my mum, of course.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say your mum. I felt like she was coming out of that story like a legend. So, yeah.
She's a legend. Yeah, so my mum's called Karen. My mum is honestly the best person in the whole world. And I know that everyone says that about their mum, but she is literally just everything. She is the, I guess, the mother that I, like, want to be one day. She is just the most beautiful, genuine, sweet person, most caring person, would do anything for me, would literally move a freaking mountain for me. And you know what? I have to give this to my dad as well, because my dad is exactly the same. And yeah, the reason why I guess, like, I am who I am, and I really, like, have to credit them with everything. Like, they have instilled in me so much, like, self-worth and so much, like, a really strong work ethic, and they, yeah, they're just the best. It's their 60th this year, so I'm planning something very exciting. I won't say, because they will listen to this, because they are, like, my biggest fans, and I'm planning something very incredible for their 60th, and I really can't wait. So my mum's the 14th of June, my dad's the 24th, and my brother's also the 24th of June, so they all have their birthdays within 10 days. Well, my brother and dad were born on the same day.
Oh, that's nice. Or is it? I'm never, my second baby was nearly born on the my husband's birthday, and it was my husband's 30th birthday, and he was just pissed off he couldn't go out.
Oh,
I mean, I've painted him out to be some horrible husband. He's an excellent husband, but he was a bit like, well, I didn't get, he always says it to me, I didn't get to celebrate my 30th birthday. I was like, it's 14 years ago, Tom, get over it.
Yeah.
Whatever. So your mum, is she still a teacher? Or is
she... No, she is an optician now. Well, she works in an optician's, I shouldn't have a proper optician, but she's wonderful. She's so wonderful. I had to dedicate this letter to her because, I mean, I bet everyone probably does say their mum, don't they?
Lots of people do say their mum, and they all, everybody, this is a universal truth. Everybody says, I know everybody says that their mum's the best, but my mum actually is.
No, my mum.
Everybody says that. You know, as a mum, the idea that my kids would say this about me one day, they definitely wouldn't say it about me today, but the idea that they would say this about me one day, and because so many people do pick their mums, like, it gives me real hope for the future. Like, you know, do you know, like, how lovely it is to hear that you've, like, you know, you don't always get things right when you're a parent. And like you said, your mum's biggest regret was not moving you from school. And actually, as a parent, you find yourself in situations where your heart saying do this thing, but then society saying, oh, you know, look, it'll be all right, it'll blow over, like, don't make a fuss.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly hard to pitch it right sometimes, and you constantly, your mum throughout your life will have felt guilty about various things and thought that she failed. So to listen to people saying that their mums are the best is brilliant.
Yeah. And she, and you know what, she never failed, really. And also, one other thing that I will say, and, like, this is a sad thing, but it turns to a happy thing. So my mum actually had breast cancer twice when I was, I think I was like 7 and 9. I was quite young, but we nearly lost her. And I guess I remember having to, like, process this as a, you know, like, a very young child, and she would write little notes for us and leave them under our pillow. Or she would get them. She got them all before she went into hospital. And I think she had bought us some presents, and she would, like, put them under our pillow. Well, my dad would put them under our pillow. And I remember very, very clearly my dad putting me to bed at night, and me, like, just thinking, like, oh God, like, and it really hit me that this, like, could be real. Like, this could be all the time. Like, my dad could always be putting me to bed. And I think that when you've gone through something like that as a little girl, it makes you have such a massive, like, I am so family orientated now. Like, I am literally, I want to do everything with my mum. Like, I want to do absolutely everything with her. I want to take her on the most amazing holidays. If she wants a freaking pair of Jimmy Choos, she's getting a pair of Jimmy Choos, right? I don't care how much they are. She deserves it, because not that she, you know, she's not very materialistic, but I just love to...
Neither am I, but I'd like a pair of Jimmy Choos.
But, like, she, you know, she deserves everything. Like, she really does. And, like, I think that when you've gone through that, it really gives you a new kind of... When people say, oh, I've not seen my mum for a couple of weeks, I'm like, how? Like, I can't go, like, 4 days without seeing my mum. Like, I am... Like, it really puts it into perspective that your parents aren't here forever. Like, they're not. And I want to spend every moment I can making as many amazing memories with her as I possibly can. So I think, yeah, that experience, as horrible as it was, has taught me, like, you have to be so grateful for the people you have around you and cherish every second, because you never know when things can change.
Absolutely. And it doesn't matter how old you are. When your mum dies, it doesn't, you know, you're still a child. You're still your mum, as if you were, like, 4 years old.
Exactly. No matter how old you are, you know, she's... And no matter how old I am, she's always going to be my mum, and I'm always going to be a little girl. So that's what my mum always says, that she's like, doesn't matter how old you get, you're always going to be our children. And my grandparents are like in their late 80s and they still call my mum and her sister their children.
Yeah, so it's a weird thing about the English language that we maybe need to adapt, but I like it. It's nice. Also, whenever I'm with my brothers, with my dad, my mum died when I was 29, but when I'm with, we behave like children. Like, immediately, like, I'm a member of parliament. I've got, like, a nearly 18-year-old son myself. Like, but when I'm with my dad, I'm immediately like, oh, God. Or, like, with my brothers. We just behave. We immediately become, like, 13-year-olds. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But you have to, because you almost want that. It's like a nice little bit of escapism.
Yeah, that's it. Like, don't be such an idiot, Luke. Yeah. Like, what is wrong with you? You're a grown woman who debates things for a living. Like, why have you just been like, yeah, you're a knob? Like, that's not a great argument, Jess. Come up with a better argument. But that's, I do feel like that is the effect your parents have on you.
Yeah.
It's nice, I like it. So how would you sign off a letter to your mum, Karen? Lovely Karen.
I would say, interestingly, what we just said, which is never feel guilty for anything, because it's made me the woman I am today, and I'm so grateful that you are still with us.
Oh, yeah, you must be.
No, I am. I really, honestly, really am.
To go through that at such a young age is a lot.
Yeah, it was. And do you know what? It's just changed my perception of people. Am I like, I never take anyone for granted, anyone in my life, no matter whether they're my mum or a friend, you know, it just changes your perception of people, because people can come and go.
Is she completely all right now?
She's great now. She is great now. Yeah, she's made a brilliant, incredible recovery. Yeah, she's great. So we're so lucky. We really are.
The second letter I've asked you to think about is to somebody who's no longer with us. So who would that letter be?
I feel like this is what everyone else is going to say as well. But, you know, this means a lot to me. So my dad's mum, my nan, she passed away. How many years ago was it now? Probably was about 8 years ago. Yeah, maybe about 8 years ago. I think I was in sixth form when she passed away. And she, do you know what? She had a very, like, the end of her life was not very nice. She was completely paralysed for like 7 years. She had a stroke, and she was in, my auntie and uncle cared for her full time for the last kind of, I think it was 7-8 years of her life. So there's a lot of things that she didn't get to see and hasn't seen. And I just honestly know that she would just be buzzing with, like, pride. I remember her and I literally used to sit at home together when she used to look after me and watch Strictly and dance together around the living room. And the thought that I am, you know, making TV shows and doing all of this really cool stuff, I think she would be, like, over the moon to watch it all and see everything that I'm doing. And, like, so often, honestly, I probably get this moment, like, 2 or 3 times a week where I'm like, God, I wish she was here. Like, I want to tell her, like, I hope she's, like, watching me and just seeing what I'm doing. So, yeah, probably my nan. Well, definitely my nan. I mean...
What was your nan's name?
Her name was Winnie.
Winnie, that is a proper nan's name. I had an auntie Winnie. That is a proper nan's name. Also, I think that... I can't speak for your family, but the generations, as it used to be the case, is that people got wealthier and people... And so when you say she wouldn't be able to imagine, like, my nan was born in literally a part of Birmingham that was cleared in the slum clearance.
Yeah.
She was a dinner lady. The idea to her that I now am the Member of Parliament who represents the area... That
yeah,
she
I bet
made
she
her. She would be like, she wouldn't, well, she just wouldn't be able to comprehend it. She'd just be like, what? This is crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, because of generations of women that went before, like your Nan Winnie, she won't have had the opportunities that you had.
No, absolutely not. Like, she had two jobs. Like, she was, when my dad was growing up, she had like five children. My dad lost his dad when he was quite young, so she was like, I guess, a single mum for a long time. And she was, honestly though, like, I remember her taking me to the pound shop, and I had no concept of what the pound shop was, and she'd go, choose anything you like, darling. And I'd be like, oh, okay, here we go. Not realising it was a pound shop. But, yeah, she was fantastic. She was so, she's one of those people that's very brutally honest. So she's very much taught me that sometimes you've got to be honest. No matter how brutal it is, you do have to be honest sometimes. And I think I look a lot like her. If I showed you a picture, you'd probably go, oh, my God. I don't actually have any pictures, annoyingly. But, yeah, I look a lot like her. I've got the McDermott look about me.
My nan, similarly, was brutal. She used to walk up to people in the street and say, that top it's doing you no favours.
But it's just, I love it.
Nan, it's very embarrassing. Stop doing this. She would just be like, oh, Dad, don't wear that colour again.
They just don't care. They just do it. They don't care.
Oh dear, it's always from a place of kindness, though, actually. There's the sort of brutal honesty from a place of kindness.
It is. Yeah, nans are brilliant, aren't they? And I really do wish she was still here to see everything that I'm doing, because I've got videos of her, we've got family videos of her, and she was going, she's going to be famous one day. She's going to be a model. She's going to be famous one day. She's going to be a model. That girl, she's going to be a model. She used to say it all the time, even when I was like a newborn baby. Like, how do you know that?
I like to think it's because Winnie liked herself quite a lot, and because you look like her. She's like that.
Yeah, she rated it.
She's got my face. She's going to be fine.
Yeah.
I love that. That is brilliant. And how dreadful to be paralysed for 7 years.
I know. And when you think about it, God, how terrible to kind of like, what an awful way to you know, finish your life. And because it was so out of character for her. She was very like, you know, liked going out all the time, was very independent, proper independent woman. Like, yeah, she was... But really family orientated, but yeah, very, very strong, very independent, very strong willed, very honest. Like, you can imagine what kind of person she was. So to go from that to that, like just in a blink, must have been mentally very hard for her to process, because she was, I guess, stuck in her own body for a really long time. And my auntie and uncle dedicated their whole lives. They converted their house to care for her full time. We used to go every Sunday and see my nan every Sunday and visit her. And, you know, we watched her over the years deteriorate. And, yeah, it was, you know, a really sad time for the family when we lost her. But I feel like she definitely, like, lives on in me in many ways.
Yeah. That's what you have to think, is that they gave you all those years of inspiration.
100%. 100%.
Well, Winnie sounds excellent, as well as having Winnie McDermott. That's a great name.
Winnie Fred McDermott.
Wow, that's, I mean, it's like a proper name.
And her middle name is Florence. I actually only found out that name, weirdly, after she passed away. I didn't know her middle name was Florence, but I'd love to put that name, the name Florence, into one of my children's names as a little, like...
I had an Auntie Winnie, she was great Auntie Winnie, and I also had an Auntie Floss, who was Florence, and we used to say,
wow.
Flossie, that's the...
Flossie is the short term
of Florence, and those old names are coming back, aren't they? But yeah, Auntie Win and Auntie Floss, they were like my nans, my granddad's sisters, and my nan absolutely loved them, they were a right hoot. Winnies of the world unite. So, how would you sign off your letter to Nanny Win?
I would say, I miss you a lot, and I really wish that you were still here to probably be jumping around the living room for joy at the, I hope you would think, wonderful things that I'm doing and the changes that I'm trying to make in the world.
We'll be back for Zara's final letter after a short break. In the meantime, why not check out another podcast from the team behind Yours Sincerely?
Hello! I'm here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Go Love Yourself. It's the show where we're working to love ourselves a little bit more.
Yay!
I'm Laura. I'm a body confidence and plus size fashion influencer. I was also on The Bake Off.
You were? Why didn't you tell anybody?
And I'm Laura's best friend, Lauren, and we're going to be talking about everything from diet culture to dating, mental health to social media, and generally not caring about what people think.
We've got new episodes out every Tuesday. Just search Go Love Yourself in your podcast app.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The last one is the letter you would send to somebody who doesn't know what a big effect they had on your life. So who would that person be?
So I was thinking about this and I didn't really know who to choose, because there's been so many people who've had an effect on my life. But the one person who I would say has, and probably I don't tell her ever, and why would I? Because it's a bit weird. But my best friend, Charlie, I met her on my first day when I joined government. I joined Department for Energy and Climate Change as an apprentice. As my first day, and we went for lunch on like my third day or something, and we've just been best friends ever since. And you know, after everything that I went through in school and after all of the years of like not having a friend, she very much taught me what it means to be loved by a friend, like what friendship is, what like unconditional love and no judgment in a friendship is. And like, that is something that has made me, I think, into the person I am today, and made me trust people and made me realise that there are lovely people out there. There are amazing people out there. There are amazing friends out there. And yeah, so she sadly moved to Wales. Her boyfriend is a footballer. So she has moved with him to, like, depending on what club he's at, she will have to move with him. So, yeah.
Does she no longer work at the Department for Energy and Climate Change?
No.
Can I just say, that's the best story I've ever heard about the Department for Energy and Climate Change.
Yeah, to be
government
honest,
departments are not somewhere I normally expect people to find, like, you know, really meaningful love and friendships. Having spent some time in government departments, they seem like sort of clinical boxes a lot of the time.
Absolutely. I mean, it was very much meant to be, because I felt like there was like us, and then there was a couple of other apprentices who were like our age, and then the next lot of people were 30 plus. So there was no one, because we were all like 17, 18. When I met Charlie, she was 17. I was, was she 16? She might have been 16 or 17, and I was 18. And yeah, it was very much love at first sight, to be honest. We were on the same
love at first sight floor. In the Department for Energy and Climate Change.
Would you believe it? Would you believe it? But yeah, we absolutely had some fun. We had some fun. We used to, when we were apprentices, quite a funny story. We used to be like, God, we need to find ourselves like a proper boyfriend. Like, we're sick of all these like boys from our home. Let's find ourselves a proper boyfriend in the Department for Energy. We used to go, should we do a fifth floor walk by? Because we used to think, maybe there's a fit guy on the fifth floor. I swear there's a fit guy on the fifth floor. Let's do a walk by. And we used to do...
I mean, just yesterday, I was with a senior civil servant from the Foreign Office. And I remarked that somebody was good looking for Westminster because it's quite a low bar. And then she said, oh, we say that, good looking for the civil service. So, yeah. Mind you, James Bond was a civil servant.
So then we used to call it our deck goggles, because it's Department of Energy and Climate Change, deck goggles. So when we were in work, we used to think someone was attractive, and then we'd all go to the pub in the evening, and I'd go, it's not fizzy, it's just we just have our deck goggles on. That's what we used to call it.
I mean, it's like when you go to a girls' school, and there's like, a lab technician who's under the age of 50, and you're all like, oh my God, it's so fit. It's like, he's not just a man under the age of 50 in this environment where there's only women. Like, yeah. What is wrong with you?
It's just, yeah, we used to get to the pub on a Friday and I'd go, that guy from the fifth floor, he's really not that fit. And she'd be like, no, he's not. Why did we think that? So funny.
Which other government departments did you work in? Did you work in the DfE, the Department for Education?
I worked at BASE.
Oh, BASE, yeah.
At DfE as well, yeah.
Well, so, there you go.
I must say, the BASE... Is it still BASE?
It's still BASE, yeah.
That building, honestly, was... Have you been in that?
Yeah, the big glass one.
The DfE one, I didn't mind. The big one on Victoria Street, oh my God, it's awful. It is awful.
All government departments are awful. The worst is...
No, but there are better ones. Like, when we were in Whitehall Place... There was a little 55 Whitehall Place. There was a little, like, an extra building. And it was actually, like, it had some kind of, like, old features. And it used to be, a meeting room for, like, cabinet something.
Yeah. The Treasury's nice. The Treasury's nice. Like,
that is it?
And the Foreign Office is nice.
Yeah. And DfE was nice because it's got a nice big, like, central part. But that BASE building, honestly, not nice. Not a nice building.
It's not a department I'd ever clamour to be part of. Oh, I love this. I don't know, Charlie, but I can't imagine in my head working in government. Just all these young, beautiful people working in the department.
I know, and we used to like try and like be quite fashionable at work, and we used to really stand out because we used to wear like really nice dresses, isn't it? And everyone would be looking at us like, what are you wearing?
The civil service needs more people like you.
I know, we tried to like glam it up a bit, but yeah, I don't know. it didn't last very long. I gave up on that after like 3 months. I was like, no one else is like that glam here, I guess. So we'll just leave it.
I remember when you were on Love Island, it was like a big news story amongst in Whitehall that you had been a civil servant. Like, that went round on like the MP's WhatsApp groups. They're like, oh my God, she used to work at the Department for Education.
But do you know what was so bad? So when I did my Love Island entrance interview, I said, my job description is not as simple as, because they were saying you're a government advisor. And I said, but I'm not a government advisor. I'm a government policy advisor. And they were like, yeah, but it's too... I said, I'm a policy advisor, like a... what was I doing at the time? Educational policy advisor. And they're like, it's too long to say government advisor. And I was like, I don't know, because I didn't have my phone, so I couldn't like look it up or anything. I was like, I don't know if like... I don't want to get in trouble for like saying that. And I was only 21, so I didn't know what like a government advisor was. It says freaking SPAD. I literally... went on and told everybody that I was a special advisor for the government at 21. And everyone was like, when I came out, everyone was like, why did you say you're a government advisor? I was like, because they said to like, just say it to condense it down because it's in a 30 second VT, like it needs to be short. So I was like, oh, okay, like, I guess it should be fine then, like, whatever. And everyone was like, why did you do that?
Did you ever think of going back to the Department for Education afterwards?
I did. When I went in, I only took it as like a career break, like a year's career break, because you don't know, do you? Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. Also, I actually really liked my job. I was really into my job. I really enjoyed it. I just got a promotion. I was really happy. So when I got approached, I turned it down, I think once or twice, because I just said, I don't.
Yeah, a civil service job is a good, secure job for life, really.
Well, it is, and I was enjoying it and had a lot of flexibility. I got on my team really well. So for me, I was a bit like, would I be leaving that and jeopardise all of that for something that's really very uncertain? So I was very much, and I'm very one of those people that plays it safe quite a lot. I'm not one to take massive risks. So I was, yeah, I wasn't 100% sure whether it was right for me. But then, yeah, I ended up doing it. And that's so funny how it went all around you. And me,
yeah, it was like that. Has anyone ever met this woman? She's, because I think we probably thought you were a spat.
She's a special advisor at 21.
I don't know. I've met some special advisors who act like they're 21. and frankly, I think you'd be better than lots that I've met. Is Charlie, she's not a civil servant anymore either.
Charlie's not a civil servant anymore. Charlie went on to work. She worked for the RSPCA for a bit in their head office. And then, yeah, she actually, like, does some work for me now.
Ah. But you don't ever tell her how much she taught you what it was like to have a friend.
I do tell her how special she is. I tell her how much I love her all the time. But I probably, when I was thinking about who I'd write my letter to, I was thinking, who would I choose? And then I was like, oh, I think it would be Charlie. And then it got me thinking about all of these things that she has taught me. Charlie is, honestly, if you met her, you'd love her. She's one of the most chilled out people in the whole world. Like, literally, her car could break down in the middle of nowhere and she'd go, oh, a bit annoying, isn't it? Like, nothing will faze her. Like, it's a skill, and it's incredible that nothing will ever faze her. Like, she never gets stressed. She's the most relaxed person I've ever met. And I was thinking, God, she's really taught me, because I can get quite irate sometimes about things. I'm quite, like, highly strung a bit when it comes to, like, work and stuff. She just taught me, just chill. Just chill. And sometimes something stressful will happen. Like, I'll drop something, smash a glass on the floor. My inner Zara will want to go, ah, fuck. But actually, I go, no, it's fine. Just sweep it up.
Just sweep it up. It's like, my husband's like that. He's never once lost a night's sleep to worry. And, like, I'll be like, oh, but it's raining. And he's like, you know, so we'll get wet. Yeah. And I'm like,
that's what she's like.
No, we won't get wet. It'll be awful. We'll have a dreadful day. And he's just like that. It's just water.
Yeah, that's what she's like. And I love it. But you need people like that in your life.
Especially if you're a bit tense. you definitely need.
Put things into perspective for you.
Just sweep it up. That's a great metaphor for life. Oh, just sweep it up.
Yeah, I love it. So, yeah, that's why I would write the letter to her, because she's taught me so much about friendship and, like, someone who just never judges you, someone who is always there for you no matter what. Like, you could have done the worst thing ever. You could have done something really bad. Not that I have, but I could. And I know I could do something really bad and she would still be there. Like, she would literally drop everything to be there. Like, if I called her now and I said I was in trouble, she would be driving from Wales straight away to save me. And you need people like that in your life. Because I have many friends, I guess, friends that wouldn't. So, yeah.
So how would you sign off your letter to Charlie?
I would sign it off by saying, I am so grateful I met you in the civil service. Thanks to the civil service for bringing us together. And I'm sorry I don't tell you enough how much of an amazing impact you've had on my life. And I hope we can be friends until we're old and grey and in a care home.
Me and my friends have got a plan to, like, basically just get into a care home together. We're, like, looking forward to it. Really looking forward to the care home years.
Yeah, I think it would be quite jokes being in a care home with your best friend, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, all of you together. Yeah. You could go for a walk on the fifth floor. See if there's any talent.
I can't believe I just told you that.
No, that is the best story I've ever heard about the civil service.
If she listens to this, she's going to be like, oh my God, Zara, you've just told all our secrets.
Every time I'm in those buildings now, I'm going to scout for talent and let you know. Yeah. If I see any.
Just to let you know, there was never any. It was always a very unfulfilled voyage.
Well, Zara, yeah. It has been a total pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
Oh, it's been totally fun, and it is such a pleasure to hear about Karen, Winnie and Charlie and all of the other brilliant people in your life. So thank you so much for doing it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you follow Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips on the podcast provider of your choice. And why not write a letter to your friends telling them all about this podcast? You could also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod. Goodbye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.